After making light work of Aston Villa, it was back down to earth with a bump for Reading at Preston. We'll look over a week that saw us take our first 3 points, but continue our away struggles. Hello, welcome to the Tile SM Podcast, episode number 135. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilesn.com. And thank you very much for taking the time to hit that download button and join us for what I'd like to say is a momentous episode, but I can't think of any connotations with the number 135, other than it's the furthest we've ever got in the podcast. So there you go. What better reason to celebrate? And here to mark it with us is Tile SM deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
It's like in The Simpsons when they have the 143rd episode spectacular. It's sort of like when they're running out of ideas and they just put together a clip show. Isn't a clip show, don't worry. I think.
No, this is all original content as far as I'm aware. Although you may well hear the same criticisms labelled at the same players. I can't guarantee that won't happen. And joining myself and Johnny this week, delighted to welcome you back for another season, Rob Langer for the Two Unfortunates. Rob, welcome back.
Hello, guys. Good to be here. And I wonder what the record is for the most number of club podcasts. Any ideas?
I imagine there are some out there that are dwarfing us. I know the Football Fancast series has got several long-running shows. So I think we've got a way to go, but we're doing our best. I think this is season 4 or 5 for us now. So yeah, we're not doing too badly. But Rob, great to have you with us, especially because you were at Deepdale on Saturday to watch, unfortunately, a Reading defeat. But we'll get into that and the win over Aston Villa. That's all coming up in the recap.
View from the Tarlhurst end. Recapping this week's championship action.
So gents, let's start off on a positive note. Reading 2, Aston Villa 1. This was a game that when the fixtures were announced at the start of the season, I think it's fair to say a lot of us were dreading. We looked at these two home games against Fulham and Aston Villa. And I think if you'd asked any fan, Johnny, if you'd said, well, Reading will get 4 points from that, I think most fans would have bitten your hand off.
Yeah, absolutely. I think looking at those first two home games as probably two of the promotion favourites if you take out Middlesbrough. I think, you know, Fulham, Middlesbrough and Aston Villa were the three favourites to get promotion from the division. And so to face those two first up was obviously a big test. And we've come through it really, really well. I mean, you say 4 points after the two games. I think in retrospect, we'll be a little bit disappointed that it's not 6 points. But obviously we went over the Fulham debacle last week. But no, I think the more encouraging thing was we made Aston Villa look very, very ordinary. I mean, I look back to the first home game of last season. I think that was beating Preston 1-0 on our first game, Sam's first game. And again, we made Preston look absolutely rubbish, and we did similar with Aston Villa here. They didn't have a chance until the 85th minute, and unfortunately the same old problem sort of persisted from there, which was letting a team in the last sort of 5 or 10 minutes and nearly again snatching a draw from the jaws of victory. So it wasn't without its worries, but certainly for 85 minutes I thought we looked absolutely fantastic.
Rob, was there anything from those two home games, particularly the Aston Villa one, that stood out to you as a particularly pleasing aspect?
Well, I think Mo Barrow in particular coming in and immediately adding a lot of pace to the mix was important. I think he caused them a lot of problems. Have John Terry and James Chester at the back. It's a pretty good, experienced centre-back pairing. And Mo, I think, looks really good, really dangerous. And I think Adi Popper as well did well on the left-hand side. So I think we did very well on the wing areas in particular.
Yeah, it was interesting to see Sam change his tactics. We did wonder if after the threat of Fulham and their counter-attacking that he would go back to that 4-3-3 that served him so well for most of last season. He did indeed do that. We didn't have a recognised striker though, Johnny, so Pelle Clement sort of was the nominal leading the line man with Mo Barrow and, as Rob mentioned, Adi Popper either side of him. No George Evans as well, after our discussion on him in the show last week. Joe Vandenberg, despite that error against Fulham, came into the team. Did you like what you see from Joey? Did you sort of see why I tweeted during the game? It's when he pinged like a 45-yard crossfield pass. And it's like, yeah, I know why he sticks with him.
Yeah, I know. I said I was out on Vandenberg last week in last week's show, but this is the good side of Joey Vandenberg. When he's committed, when he's concentrating, you know, when he's fully in. He's mentally in a game, he can dominate a game, and that's exactly what he did against Aston Villa. Like I said, Villa had absolutely no chances, and Joey was really commanding in the middle of the park, sort of breaking up play and spreading it wide and always being that extra option. I think he came off with an injury in the end, and Evans came on during that game. I think Vandenberg sort of signalled to the bench that he needed to come off rather than Stam doing it tactically. And then obviously he missed out against Preston. So I think something
I think it's
was
a thigh injury.
Yeah, so I think something was wrong there. But no, I mean, you know, that is the good side of Joey. And I still think that he's going to cost you points. But if he can put in performances like that, which possibly earn you points, I think we probably would have beaten them without Joey anyway. But yeah, you know, it's just a balancing act. A very frustrating player who can be class on his day, but can also make that catastrophic error.
Yeah, and you just have to see the helter-skelter nature of the Championship. Aston Villa, who I thought were by far the worst team that we've played so far this year, turn around in the very next game, they comfortably see off Norwich, who have picked up some good results themselves this season, albeit on an inconsistent basis. So it's just the swings and roundabouts of the Championship. Rob, unfortunately, that game against Villa, as good as it was, ended on sort of a bit of a down, with Reading conceding the goal and then very nearly giving away a goal in the last minute, a free kick. I think it was Gareth McCleary conceding it.
Yeah, McCleary just got booked before that as well. So
yeah,
he looked quite impressive in forward areas, but a liability defensively when he came on.
Yeah, and he gave away that free kick right at the top of the box in the centre. Fortunately, hits the wall and Reading cling on for a win. But it was a sort of a sign of things to come, Rob. You were at Deepdale on Saturday, Reading losing 1-0. And really just being, let's face, well, certainly on the surface anyway, dominated. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the last 20 minutes against Villa in some ways was reminiscent of the first 20 minutes against Preston, in that we were just very unconvincingly trying to keep possession, tippy-tapping it about in a very, as I said, unconvincing manner. And the opposition were just getting in, getting tackles in. Villa, of course, I thought were extremely poor on the night, and obviously we did enough to hold on. But Preston are a good team all around the pitch, particularly in central midfield with Ben Pearson and Daniel Johnson. And, well, it was just a classic what not to do in Championship football. It was like laying off people and just inviting the team to come on.
Yeah, one force change that we mentioned, Joey Vandenberg picked up an injury. So we saw Leandro Bacuna make his Reading debut. What did you think?
I thought he looked short of match fitness, to be honest. He does look defensive primarily. I know he's a utility player who can play across the midfield and also as a wing back, but I thought he looked as if he was going to be a kind of Danny Williams replacement, really, somebody who's going to maybe sit in front of the defence. Only to start with, Liam Kelly was playing in the nethermost role right in front of the back four, and that didn't really suit us. So Bacuna, I think, jury out, really. I wouldn't want to judge him on that. I presume he hasn't played much football, but he certainly didn't impress on the day.
Yeah, and his cause wasn't helped with two injuries just after Preston had taken the lead. We'll come on to the goal in just a second, Rob, but two big injuries, Kelly and Swift both being forced off. Was that game over from that point?
Well, I think possibly, although probably the worst period of the game was early on, while they were both still on. Interestingly, I think we played in a more direct manner than I've seen us play in the second half. I think Stan, we've talked about it maybe having a lack of willingness in the past to mix it up, to go for a plan B. But on this occasion, I think actually we were more direct. Certainly Manone was kicking it long quite a bit. I think neither Kelly or Swift imposed themselves on the game in the time they were on. And a cynic might say maybe they were withdrawn tactically and they've said it's an injury just to spare their blushes, but maybe that's a controversial thing to say because it just didn't look like their kind of game, really. Although subsequently it turns out that there does seem to be some credence in the injury.
Yeah, Stam's not given an update as to how long they'll be out. Obviously, they'll probably be having scans and whatnot today, which is Monday as we record this. Be very surprised to see them play against Millwall in the Carabao Cup tomorrow night. But yeah, two key cogs in the midfield, Johnny, especially when we're talking about having Pelle Clement leading the line. I know we've got those wide players in Barrow and Popper, but Clement, just he's not convinced me so far in the two chances he's had to lead that line.
No, and I don't think he's necessarily a natural striker. I mean, I could see what Stan was trying to do playing Clement against Aston Villa, because even though he was in theory sort of the figurehead, he rarely sort of led the line. He was always popping up in the midfield or out wide and just basically trying to drag players out of position and create space. And obviously, when you've got a player like John Terry at centre-back, you can run rings around him at half speed. And so that will create spaces for the likes of Barrow and Popper, and it's a very sort of pacey, movement based front three when you include Clement and Barrow and Popper. But the problem is, in a game like this, sometimes you do just need to sort of, you know, hulk up and dig in, and especially away from home, you just need someone who can relieve the pressure from you. And I don't know whether Mendes did that when he came on. Obviously he had an hour to do so, but I don't think that this is, I mean, this is something that we keep coming back to, is these tactics of keeping the ball simply don't work away from home, because the home, when we are away from home, the home team naturally puts more pressure on you. And so that means that, yes, we can, when we're playing at home, we can keep the ball because no one's putting any pressure on the ball. Whereas when we're playing away from home, you've got that pressure, and we just can't seem to cope. And when you don't have an outlet, which Pelle Clement doesn't appear to be, then it's almost impossible for you to keep the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think Clement, to me, he certainly doesn't look like a striker. I think he did well against Villa by dropping deep, and that confused Chester and Terry because he was dropping maybe 20 yards off them, picking up the ball, putting little passes out to Barrow and Popper. But he's certainly not a striker. And then, Johnny, in answer to your question with Mendes, I think he did okay on Saturday. He certainly works hard. He got some flick-ons. We don't see many flick-ons these days with this style of play. But he, you know, we know he's limited. We know, you know, he has the odd good match like he did at Villa last season. But, you know, we need a forward so badly it hurts, basically, at the moment.
Yeah, there does seem, there's nobody to ease that pressure. We keep coming back to it. There is no Shane Long, there's no Jason Roberts, Nicky Forster type that you can give the ball to, and they've got a chance of creating something by themselves. Even Jan Kermigan in the back end of last season just seemed to have that little purple patch that got us over the line. This time around, obviously, injury is really cruel to stand with John Daddy Bodvarsson and Jan Kermigan both out, and Mendes, as mentioned, limited in what he can do. I don't think when given a chance against Fulham, he particularly pulled up any trees either. So, but for all this talk of a striker, Rob, the stat that stuck out to me after this weekend is it's two clean sheets now in regular league games and the playoff semi-final in 2017 for Reading. And if they can't, if you're conceding a goal a game, it's asking a lot to get two away from home.
Yeah, I mean, I think none of the defence played well. Actually, all four of them were poor on the day. Blackett was his typical self of looking too hesitant in possession. Both McShane and Liam Moore really struggled with the presence of Jordan Hugill, who's a good all-round striker, a very, very muscular presence up front. And then they have Sean Maguire, who they've just got from Cork City, who looked quite lively. And Chris Gunter was okay, but pretty limited, really. I would say that Vito Minone, I think, played well. You know, he had some good saves, and I've definitely put him down, I think, in my player ratings on the website as the man of the match, and that was a pretty comfortable decision to have to make.
Yeah, that's been one of the pleasing aspects of the start of this season. I've not at any moment thought, oh, we're really missing Ali Alhamsi, Johnny. So far, Vito Minone is, you know, he's given confidence. I don't think he's even had a flappy moment, other than that one where he just passed out of play against Fulham.
Yeah, although I think that was a bit of a confusion of communication between both him and Paul McShane. So I don't think it was just entirely his errors. But no, certainly in terms of the shot stopping, he does seem to be just as good as Ali Alhamsi, if not better. I mean, I'm sure that there will be a time when he does make a mistake, because all goalkeepers make mistakes, and it's sort of that mental side of the game of, can he recover from it and can he get back from it? But, I mean, he doesn't look any different to Ali Alhamsi, really. He's a fine shot stopper, not the best with the ball at his feet, but can just about deal with it. And you know, certainly he looks fine, I'd say.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal having to change the keeper, but so far anyway, don't seem to have lost out. But going back to Hugill, Rob, the goal, just awful, awful defending from a group of senior defenders. On that side, you should be having Chris Gunter, Liam Moore and Paul McShane all doing the dirty work. And to leave a striker with that much space 20 minutes into the game when your legs should be fresh, it's just not acceptable.
Well, there were numerous occasions when they were just breaking through the middle, and it was sort of a long angled pass from what I remember, sort of that Tom Barkhuizen, who's a very cultured player, latched onto, crossed, and then Maguire teed up Hugill, who'd really cleverly dropped into space, and it was just a simple finish after a good bit of control. So, well deserved at that point. We could have been behind before that.
Yeah, if you go head over to thetarlesend.com, you can read Will's analysis. He's had a little bit of a look at why some of these defensive lapses are coming, especially away from home. One of the areas he pointed out, Johnny, is the lack of discipline from the midfield to get back and cover, to close down gaps, and to make it difficult for opposition to get shots in and to get into the box. Is that something that you've noticed?
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at the goal we conceded against Villa, it was kind of similar. Across in, a man completely free, sort of 6-12 yards out. And that shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't be allowing the opposition to have free chances from knockdowns and from headdowns inside your own box. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you know, if you look at the goal that we conceded against Preston, there's no one within about 10 yards of him. And it's the same against Aston Villa as well. There's just no one anywhere near Conor Hourihan when he puts a shot in. I mean, George Evans is sort of, who you'd think would be the guy sort of picking him up, is basically guarding the near post or the far post. It's just, there just seems to be a real lack of positional awareness, like you say, from the midfield, whether that's in terms of picking up runners, whether that's in terms of who they should be marking or closing down. It just does seem that, especially when we are pulled out of shape and dragged out of shape and having to chase shadows, which we all too often seem to have to do, there's no one really pulling rank and no one really knows what to do. It's just sort of free for all, basically.
Yeah, and Will made a great point. Again, I very much encourage you to go head over to thetylersend.com and check out. There's diagrams and everything that we're talking about, so go check that out. But Rob, the other thing that Will pointed out was, he said, I could understand if this was Stam's tactic and they were being very attacking, creating lots of chances, and that as a consequence was leading to a few more at the other end. But you look at the stats on Saturday, you look at the stats at QPR, Reading are a team that are only creating six to ten shots on goal, of which most weeks we're getting somewhere between one and four on target. That, again, that's not a ratio of shots that's going to win you too many games if you're conceding one or two per match.
No, that's right. And I think there's probably an argument for shoring it up a bit away from home, just seeing what we can do with a tighter formation, certainly three at the back, I would have thought, and with the two wing-backs, which has worked quite well at points last season. I think we've just got to be a little bit more cautious.
I think he's hamstrung a little bit. I think we underestimate the impact that Jordan Obita can have in that wing-back role. You saw the job, arguably his best performance in years for Reading was at Fulham in that playoff semi-final at Craven Cottage, with him getting up and down that flank, and he broke to score the goal. Tyler Blackett, he just seems to be doing a job. He's okay. I thought he was good against Villa, not great. You can see his limitations, and teams are working this out. I had this argument with George Evans. Well, I didn't argue with George Evans. I had this argument about George Evans. He's much bigger than me. I wouldn't want to take him on. Sorry, George. Please don't get me. Anyway, about George Evans last week, in terms of, if teams know what your limitations are, they're not worried about you, so they can spend more time worrying about Amodu Barrow or a Pella Clement or an Adrian Popper. If you know Tyler Blackett's not going to hurt you with a cross, again, it just takes away one of those weapons for Reading.
I think there's real evidence this season in some of the early games that found out is strong, but I think teams, in this day and age where statistical analysis is so sophisticated, teams know how to play against us already. And I think, you know, QPR and Preston were both in our faces from the word go. Yep. And with Tyler Blackett's not very comfortable in possession or when he's got space, and people were closing him down.
I distinctly remember having this argument with you at points last season when you were on the show. Is this, again, just another case of Stam being too stubborn? Looking at the personnel he's got available right now, should he be being more pragmatic with that lineup? Or, again, is it a case of, no, you want this system drummed into them as much as possible?
I don't think there's a lot he could do. I mean, Blackett had to play because Obita's injured. I think at the moment we are we're very, very constrained by the injuries. And I think really, watching the first 20 minutes on Saturday, I wouldn't blame the manager at all. I think it's really the players just seem to be mentally not quite there or not quite ready. And OK, it's partly the manager's responsibility to inspire that, but he said before the game, we need to be ready, we need to be aggressive. So he should have said that to them. I'm sure he did. And then it just turns out that some of the players just look a bit lackadaisical and a bit casual.
Well, Johnny, I thought it was interesting because Stam decided to have a little bit of a pop at the officials after the game for their standard refereeing, particularly the tackles on Kelly and Swift. He said, I mentioned it, meaning the tackle on Kelly, to the fourth official, and he said the referee let it go because it was the beginning of the game and he'd see how the game progresses. But I think it was straight away a yellow card. Their player deliberately knocks him on the leg, and that's why he needed to come off. I think the referee needs to do something about that. There are a couple of other incidents as well with pushing and shoving during the game, and with extra time in the second half, there are only 3 minutes added on. The home record is good, but you don't want to build everything on that. You want results away from home, and for some reason, we're looking into it and thinking about it. but we need to do better away. Every team wants to get results at home, but you need to get into a certain rhythm to do well away. Last season, we had a couple of results away from home, and we still ended up third in the league. We had a few poor results too, but you always want to do better. We've got a few injuries, and we are still building. Do you think Stam should be deflecting some blame onto the officials, or do you think he should be not necessarily digging out his players, but maybe sort of saying they need to be a little bit tougher?
Well, I think it's a standard tactic, really, to deflect blame onto the officials when you lose. I mean, you only have to look at someone like Arsene Wenger to see he's been doing that for about 20 years. And I think the extra time argument is just one of the most pointless arguments, because if you can't score in 93 minutes, the likelihood you're going to score in that 94th minute is is extremely low. Yeah, I mean, it's good, you know, it's good that he recognises that the away record is absolutely terrible, because it is. And, you know, it's very lucky that we have made the Medeski Stadium into such a fortress, particularly last year and obviously so far this year as well, staying unbeaten in those two games. And like I said, I think you see that when teams come to the Medeski Stadium, they play with a certain level of respect for us, in that they let us have the ball and then they really sort of try and break. They don't try and play us at our own game. Whereas when you go away from home, the home team obviously tries to impose their will on you. And it just seems that we can't cope with that. Perhaps it's because we're used to playing at such a slow, methodical pace that suddenly when you've got a man running at you from 10 yards away, you panic a little bit. I hope it's not just as basic as that, but I think it is just down to that complete change in tempo, the complete change in pressure, because the amount of pressure that gets put on the side when we're at the Medeski and when we're away is completely different. And I think that must have something to do with it tactically.
Yeah, any escape route for Stam in the refereeing, Rob?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, if it was an incident, an off-the-ball incident on Kelly in the first minute, then it's quite possible that did happen, but I didn't notice anything. And a lot of people were complaining about Ben Pearson, but I just thought he's an excellent defensive midfielder who's tigerish in the challenge and exactly what you want. I mean, if we had a player like that, I'd be very happy. And I don't think he's particularly operating beyond the bounds of the rules either. I think he's just a damn good player.
Yeah, so ultimately that leaves us with 4 points from the first four games. Not the worst haul in the world. We're certainly not struggling as of yet. But if anyone thought we were going to have a blistering start out the blocks, This sort of brings you back down to earth. And I think we're on course for sort of, if we were to not pick up any points in the next two games, I think we'd be on the same level of points we were in 2011-12, Johnny. But yeah, that'd have a happy ending at least.
And I was going to say as well, I believe that from these four games last season, we got 4 points.
We did indeed. We beat Preston, drew with Brighton and lost to Newcastle and Wolves.
I meant in terms of the exact games that we played.
Oh, yes, so yeah, and that as well, yeah.
Villa at home, Fulham at home, Preston away and QPR away, we got 4 points.
No, we lost to Villa at home last season.
But we got 4 points from the four games.
Ah, yes, yeah.
So the results may have been different, but we've still ended up with the same amount of points from these games. So, yeah, we ended up third last year. I mean, obviously everyone wants to start with 12 points out of 12, but you can't always do that. But it's good to see that, you know, we may have lost to Villa at home, and I think we must have won at Preston possibly, but
no, we got beat 3-0 at Preston, but we beat them at home on every day.
Okay. Well, okay.
Yep. The point remains valid.
Despite the gloom of the Preston result, I don't think we should forget the Villa result and what a great performance and an encouraging evening it was. So I think there's by no means any need to panic at this stage. I think it's been a decent start. You yourself, Dan, said in an article for the blog a few weeks ago that you were fully expecting a hangover.
Yep.
And I wouldn't say 4 points is a dramatic hangover at the moment. We need a couple of wins and then we'll be back up well in the top half, I think.
Yeah, and don't disregard, you know, the form that Preston themselves have been in. You saw their home form last season. It was very good. It's one of the best in the league. This season, they've already beaten Sheffield Wednesday. They've got a point at Leeds, so they're a good side as well.
They're 10-minute Leeds as well.
Yeah, so they will do what they always do. They always seem to be hanging around that sort of top half of the table, and I expect them to be challenging for the top six at some stage. Whether they'll make it, who knows? But that just about wraps up the recap. We won't have a news bites this week because there's just not a lot of news, but I will bring up one point before we move on to the mailbag. That was a transfer rumour that popped up today, Johnny. Ola John. According to the Daily Mirror, he's looking to return to Reading after a highly successful loan spell couple of years ago.
Yeah, he became a fan's favourite as well. This very much did sound like agent talk. I think, you know, when you read through these rumours and you sort of imagine the agent writing a blurb about their player, I think this was almost entirely it. This is rubbish.
Yeah, Rob, you can just imagine the agent sort of speaking to a journal. Yeah, there's a few works. Yeah, you know, Reading's always an option for us. Ola did well there a couple of years ago. Yap likes him, sort of thing. That sort of conversation. And next thing you know, it's in the paper.
Well, just not enough consistency when he was here before, was there? And I think that would be severely underwhelming if he were to join.
It's the most non-needed position ever as well. Out of every position in this squad, I think winger is the one that just about every Reading fan would say, you know what, we're good with McCleary, Barrow, Harriet, Behrens, Popper. Bakuna can play there as Clement. I think Mendes has done a job there as well. So there you go. You've got eight options, and that's not even including players Bob from Larson. The U setup as well. Yeah. Mm. So no to Ola John. Look, do I think he's got talent? Certainly. But do I want to pay £10,000-£15,000 a week to a man that's completed 90 minutes three times in three seasons? No.
He's a luxury player. That's all he is. He's a luxury player, and we can't afford a luxury player.
100% agreed. Right. That wraps up the recap and the very briefest of news bites. We'll move on now to your section of the show. It is the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
Okay, mailbag time, and thank you to everyone who, as always, has chipped in to that mailbag via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for your emails, and those of you who've liked us over at Facebook, it's at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend, and finally, the YouTube channel, it's at youtube.com/thetarlhurstend. That's where you will find all of our nice, handy video content, including these podcasts as well, if you know, you want to watch them. There's not a lot to actually watch because we don't tape them, but you can still listen away. And we do post-game shows and bits and pieces like that, so go check that out as well. And before I get into your questions, a massive thank you to everyone who continues to help the cause, who joins that elite circle via patreon.com/thetarlhurstend. That is our crowdfunding source. It's how we buy little bits of extra equipment, fund subscriptions, all sorts of fun and games. And you can go there, patreon.com/thetarlhurstend, and chip in whatever you fancy, whether it's a pound, whether it's a tenner, whether it's 100. You know, look, I'm not gonna put a limit on what you want to give, but even if it's just a couple of quid, it makes a massive difference. And a big thank you to everyone who has already done so and continues to give month after month. It is very much appreciated. Right, moving along. George Bone says, waiting for the chance, in quotation marks, once we're all dead and buried, is that how we want to play football? The 106 side would laugh.
Well, I think time's moved on, really. I mean, the 106 side all moved to other clubs and did nothing. So, I mean, obviously they were magnificent at the time, but it would be very interesting actually to see how they would cope now, given the kind of tactical sophistication that's sort of risen up in the Championship. And I'm still a fan, really, of the style of play. I think my main contention is it just needs to be carried out with more zip and more tempo. I think it's occasionally too slow, but I would defend Stam in wanting us to keep the ball on the floor and to pass it around as much as I can.
Johnny, do you see an evolution in this side to the point where they are not waiting for that chance, but they are forcing that chance?
Not as yet, because I think even against Aston Villa, even though we looked far more dangerous in an attacking sense than we have recently in many months, we still were sort of... I think I particularly remember one where it was sort of like passed along four different players on the edge of the box before finally someone had a go and it was blocked. So I don't think that we're quite at that cutting edge yet. But at the same time, I think against Villa, we showed far more attacking intent and far more purpose than we have in recent months. And I think it's, like I mentioned earlier, with Pedro Clement sort of playing that attacking role, but not quite being an all-out attacker. I think Stam is trying to put nuances in the game, trying to make sure that the likes of Barrow and Popper can get shots in on goal, that Clement can, that Swift is driving forward, that Kelly's driving forward. I mean, we saw that Kelly has scored three goals already this season. So clearly, I think, I don't want to call it total football because that's lofty praise, but I think Stam is trying to get to that stage where you don't have one player you rely on for goals. Goals can come from anywhere. And we've seen that with the likes of Barrow and his unpredictability, Popper with the goal against Villa, or the own goal, as it turned out, against Villa. I think you're seeing more shots coming from everywhere.
Yeah, we did see that to a certain extent last season, with the likes, especially in the first half of the season, Gareth McCleary and to a lesser extent Roy Bearers were popping up with goals. I think it's going to get better, but these injuries must be driving Stam bonkers, because every time he thinks, right, I'm getting my team into a little bit of a rhythm, loses a player, lost Joe Vandenberg, and then he loses two players in the first 35 minutes up at Deepdale. So that's not going to help things at all. So, bear with it. And hopefully, once he's able to pick a settled side and he's got some forward options and maybe one or two before the transfer window closes, it might just improve. Chris Hartley says, while I accept that Reading were poor, we should have created more had not Swift or Kelly not been injured. Kelly more so than Swift. Swift has been a bit mess so far this season, but I think with Kelly on the pitch, the final ball at times may have been better. Also, three goals we've conceded this season have come from not stopping the ball into the box. This is an area we need to improve on.
I certainly agree with the last bit, although not necessarily stopping the ball into the box, but knowing how to deal with the ball in the box, because I don't think the problem has been the cross into the box. It's been an absolute shambles when we've been defending it. And I'm thinking squarely of the last two goals we conceded against Preston and against Aston Villa, where, like I mentioned earlier, you've got strikers free on the edge of the six-yard box with the ball at their feet, which is just ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rob, we sort of tackled the Kelly and Swift impact in the recap, but what do you think on that final point from Chris? Do you think it's a case that we need to be stopping it at source, or is Johnny right? It's just a case of actually just dealing with it.
I think just dealing with it, really. I mean, I would also defend Swift as having had a really good game against Aston Villa. I think he was excellent.
Yeah, great. By far his best game of the season.
But I would agree with Chris Hartley that, you know, even though our worst portion of the game on Saturday was when Swift and Kelly were in the team, yes, of course we missed them. Of course we would have created more, I think, had they still been on the pitch in the latter stages.
Yeah, you certainly backed them to do something along those lines, especially Swift and both of them with their set pieces. They're a great source of goals. Laura Royal says, enough talk of referees. If we get a dodgy penalty at Wembley in the playoff final, it will all even itself out. Also, back in the day, we had no player for a position. AD Williams would slot in. So why no makeshift striker for Reading FC? Well, I think we're seeing one with Pella Clement. I don't think he's a natural striker. Anybody else in the team, Johnny, that you think, yeah, they could do a job up front? A marauding Thiago Alori, perhaps?
Oh, God, no. I think if you had the likes of, say, a front three of Barrow, McCleary and Popper, I think that could be sort of quite exciting, because, as I mentioned, you've got, I think the opposition would have real problems with dealing with their pace and movement and trickery. And I think that is something that Stam is slowly trying to move towards. Like I said last week, I don't think we necessarily, especially at home, need someone who's particularly strong in the air, because we keep the ball on the ground the whole time. So you don't necessarily need someone who's there to win the headers or the crosses into the box. And what he's trying to do is create chances with pace and with movement. Well, I think we've seen that most of the players he's bought this off-season, one of their strengths is their speed and their quickness.
Yeah, and Rob, as much as I laud AD Williams famously wearing every shirt from 1 to 11 back before there were squad numbers, it was a bit of a different era, and one of his former teammates, Mickey Gooding, makes this point frequently. He says, the two positions you can't have too few players in are centre-back and centre-forward, because they are those specialist positions. And unless, is there somebody in that squad that you think, yeah, they could be a makeshift forward?
No, not that I'm thinking of at the moment. I mean, McCleary actually did come on in a pretty central role on Saturday and wasn't that effective, albeit behind Mendes. And no, I can't see it. Even someone like Bakuna, who's being trumpeted as a utility player, I don't think forward was on his CV. So no, not at the moment. We just need someone in that box, in that window, you know. We need it in the next 10 days.
Wonder if Anzi Yakola fancies a rumble up front.
Yeah.
See what he can do. He's tall. That'll do. Win some headers. Moving along. Agreeing on the referee thing. There's no point talking about it. I don't know whether it will even itself up over the season, but it's something we can't control. So, best to move on. Alex Everson. Central midfield, away from home, provide no attacking threat, yet no defensive cover. The game passes them all by. Also, the lack of the striker is not the main issue. Had we had Oliveira or Wells up front at Preston, they still would not have scored. Why are we not creating more chance from open play after over a year in the system?
I think it is a concern, especially away from home. I think Will put it in his piece that we only had one shot from inside the box against Preston, whereas Preston had, what, 13, 14 chances inside the box? So, yeah, I mean, you can clearly see that we're still trying to... We're still struggling to create chances, especially when we get to that area inside the box. I mean, you even see it when we're at home as well, because teams are very happy to just put two banks of four, or a bank of four, then a bank of five, inside their third of the pitch and say, right, do something with it and come at us.
Yeah, Rob, is there a magic bullet? Is there a player that, you know, what I talked earlier about, if you did, you know, he was very loosely linked with us, but if you did just plug Shane Long into that team on Saturday, do you think Reading would have got a positive result?
Maybe not on Saturday. I'm inclined to agree with Alex that we just didn't create many chances. The only chance I can remember was a header from Mendes just before half time.
There weren't any Reading chances in the 2-minute highlight package that was produced by Reading. So
no. And no. I mean, Shane Long, though, I think you're talking about a player who's a bit of a class above. But I think, as discussed on the podcast extra on Friday, I'm not sure we're realistic in thinking that he's going to come.
No, unfortunately not.
But I think he would create his own chances. Just thinking back to that last year he was at Reading, he was just unbelievable. So, and a player of that quality, I mean, that's a real notch up from what we've got. So, yeah. Mm.
Would that be, you know, sort of expanding on that? If Reading have only got one, you know, say they have only, say, £5-6 million in the kitty, would you just spend that all on a striker now? Are they secure and strong enough elsewhere to just be able to say, right, we're putting all our eggs into the striker basket?
Yes. I said this 2 weeks ago, yes.
Yeah.
I would.
Rob?
I think so, yeah. I mean, and certainly if it was the right one, I mean, that's the conundrum. I mean, you can easily blow £5 or £6 million on someone who's not that great. But I mean, I think, yeah, I think that is over and above everything where we need someone, particularly given the rumours that Kermigan is likely to be out for a few months.
Yeah, it's looking like it more likely November for an early return for him. And that's only when he can start sort of getting back. So unfortunately, yeah, Jan's final season looks like being a short one. Yeah, again, it comes down to the right player. If you said to me, you've got £5 million, Shane Long will sign for £5 million, I go out and do it. And I just really hope that everybody else can get fit. You know, people were talking about, going back to this Ole John rumour, there was a Twitter follower that was saying that, yeah, but he's a great luxury player. He's a great impact player from the bench. And my argument at this point is, we haven't got the budget and the resources to spend money on 10-minute players now. We're at the point where you need to be buying 80-minute players, 90-minute players. The next people we buy should be players that are either going straight into the first team or have got a damn good chance of getting into that first team on a week-in, week-out basis. We've got a lot of utility players now. We've got a lot of options. We've got a fantastic academy as well. So go out and buy proven quality. Give the squad a lift. Give the fans a lift. And I know we've got to be creative, but that one marquee signing, if it's the right one, can just make such a massive difference, Rob.
Oh, it really would. I mean, we've already seen to a lesser extent, and hopefully it might turn out to be a sort of a bigger extent, the impact that Barrow's had already, I think, looks, you know, as if he can really add something different. So, and that was 1.5 million, which was a good fee, I think. So, yeah, I mean, something that would really make people sit up and take notice. Mind you, Sheffield Wednesday blew 10 million on Jordan Rhodes, didn't they? So it just shows you it doesn't guarantee anything.
Yeah, and Aston Villa, Ross McCormack last season as well. So, yeah, there are no guarantees in this division. But hopefully, it looks like Oliveira has now established himself in the Norwich team, which is a real shame. That one now looking unlikely. But Naki Wells, though, with Huddersfield winning 2-2, him sitting on the sidelines, just maybe he will end up at the Madstad.
Well, a few weeks ago when this first came up, I thought 10 million for a player who scored 10 goals, you know, the obvious, even with my arithmetic, I can work out that's not that good a deal. But now, having seen them really struggle on Saturday, I'm thinking, well, at least he would provide a bit extra maybe.
I don't think they'd spend 10 on him. I think that would be a classic. We'll pay his wages for a season-long loan, and if we get promotion, we'll give you...
Bit like Vidra, yes.
I think if we sign him, it will be at 9 PM on deadline day.
Yeah, I think that's where we might, and I think that is where you will get the value now, because Premier League teams will still be formulating their squads right up to the final day, and I think it will be in those last days after, between that final Premier League game and the deadline. What is it on the Wednesday at midnight? Is it? I think
it's 11 PM.
Yeah. So we will. There should be plenty for Mr. Jacob South-Klein to keep an eye out for in Bushwatch this year. So I'm looking forward to the return of that anyway. Right, moving on. Steve Curtis, a.k.a. Raw Hoops. If Stan were to play a double pivot, Hashtag pretentious alert. Which two players, his words, not mine, which two players would you like to see? Also, Swift and Kelly are both injured. Who forms your three-man midfield? Let's start with the last part of that, Johnny. Who gets to start on Saturday at Birmingham?
What options do we...
We've got Bakuna, Evans...
Vandenberg.
I suppose you've got Renamota.
No.
Stephen Quinn?
No. Bakuna, Evans and Vandenberg, I think. I think that is... It might not be very good going forward, but I think at least two of them are good defensively. And right now, I would take 0-0. Just get a point on the board away from
home. I fully fit Stephen Quinn gets in my midfield, but otherwise...
I think a half fit Stephen Quinn gets in your midfield.
I think, yeah, quarter fit. I think, yeah. I think as long as he can actually cross the line, I think he gets into my team. Yeah. Rob, who would your three be at the moment?
I think I would probably... I'm a bit with you on Quinn. I really like him, but I would think about maybe having him because, to be honest, I don't think, as I said earlier, Bakuna looked particularly match fit last weekend. So I would think about having him with Kelly and not with Kelly with Evans and Vandenberg. Although that's effectively possibly a treble pivot, rather than a double pivot. So in answer to the double pivot question, which I think I had to look it up, I must admit, and show my lack of knowledge, is basically two defensive midfielders, I'm right, aren't I?
One sort of pushes forward to support attacks.
I mean, I think Joey, who one assumes with a thigh injury, he will be fit because it will be 10 days since he previously played. So I think I'd definitely have him in, and Evans probably, if we're going to play that kind of system.
Yeah, especially away from home. Birmingham will come on to it very shortly. But, you know, they are... Ari's got them playing... albeit not a fantastic level, but away from home, you can't take any team lightly. Rob Stevens, can understand how hard it is to get a quality striker, but surely we can find a defensive midfielder in our budget. We need a new Ledger Wood.
I think that's Bakuna, isn't it?
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Hopefully someone between Quinn, Evans, Vandenberg and Rinomota and everyone, hopefully they can find one of them to do a job.
So,
fingers crossed. And Matt says, I agree that a striker is the main priority, but surely the defence needs new additions, continually letting us down. Well, Stam said he was still after a defender. Do you think it is a centre-back he's after, Rob?
Well, I think the interesting figure in the middle of all this is Thiago Ilori, really, who's one of our record transfers at £2.5 million. Apparently, by all accounts, didn't go to QPR, but didn't have a great game. But surely it's a bit early just to decide that he's not in the team. I mean, he played pretty well in the playoff games. I mean, I would say, you know, he's there. We spent a lot of money on him and he's on the bench. So I don't know whether we need another person.
Yeah, slightly curious, especially, you know, as mentioned, you know, he plays well. He's apparently, he was a standby.
Record signing.
Yeah.
Bit concerning.
They seem to have a lot of options and cover at centre-back for me at the moment, especially with Jordan Beater fit, because then you could play Blackett there as well, and you've got Joey and George Evans that can both fill in and do a job as well. Johnny, would you be spending any money in the central defence, or is this just, do you think Stam's more looking at a wing-back?
I don't even think he's looking at a wing. I really don't know where he's looking, to be honest. I mean, I agree on Thiago Ilori. I think, you know, to get a straight red in his first game and then... He was very, very shaky in the home game against QPR and against Fulham, and I think got sacrificed because he was on a yellow card. And 10v10 certainly wouldn't be where we wanted to go. I mean, perhaps he's made his judgment on him. If you look at, we've got Abita and Blackett at left back. We've got Gunter and potentially Bakuna and potentially Tene Watson at right back. And then, like you say, we've got a number of players at centre back. I can't see why we need another defender.
I can see the argument for a new left back. I think now with Bakuna there to cover Gunter and you've got Tenai Watson as well, there doesn't seem to be that option. I know Blackett can fill in and do a job, but it does seem to hamper us tactically when he does that.
But then do we need... I mean, you said about sort of the players coming into the team, so this would be a left back to replace Abita and
this
Blackett.
This would be a situation where I would advocate Reading dipping into the loan market, getting a good Premier League youngster, sort of similar... Well, if we could get, you know, the next Ryan Bertrand, brilliant. But someone is a bit of cover, because Jordan Abita's still a couple of weeks away, it looks like. I just think that going with Blackett alone is just leaving us a little bit exposed. But yeah, it's a case of how much funds are available.
But then we're unlikely to get a Premier League young left back if Stam says to them, well, they might get a game every couple of weeks. I mean, if they come to us, then they'll expect to be playing every week because they'll want them to develop.
Not necessarily. You see the likes of Michael Hector go out and not play every week.
Yeah, and you see the likes of Reece Oxford come to us and play about, what, twice? Or Jordan Mutch? So, or slightly different case of Jordan
Playing Mutch. Twice here is better than not playing at all.
That's true.
Rob, left-back priority?
At the moment, in the immediately, I half agree with you, Dan, because you just think I'm not very comfortable with Blackett playing there. I think Blackett can do a job as a left-sided centre-back. I think he'd be probably pretty good in that position. But I think for 11 days until Jordan Obita's fit, assuming, or 14, 18 days till he's fit, I think the money would be best diverted towards the fabled striker that Johnny and I were calling for, really. Yeah.
Maybe some sort of forward that can also fill in at left back as well. Some sort of dual role would be good. Anyway, we will see what transpires between now and the end of the window. I said there are 10 days to go, so Stam says he wants players. Fingers crossed he can get them in. In the meantime, we've got to get down to both cup and league business, and we'll look ahead to both of those games against Millwall and Birmingham. That's coming up in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
Johnny, it's the Carabao Cup. Comes back to the Bernesi Stadium tomorrow. We entertain Millwall in the second round. A chance of Wembley on offer if we beat them and then draw Spurs away in the next round. Loose, but you know, I'll take it. Good chance to get through. Cheap tickets. Would you be bothered at all if we lose?
I guess it sort of depends what team he puts out. I mean, I think we've now got enough players coming back from injury and sort of a big enough squad that you'd expect him to put a decent side out. I mean, I know that in the first game we saw a lot of youngsters, the like of Rinomota and Andreessen coming off the bench. Whereas I think now we've sort of got a lot more mouths to feed in the squad, and so I'd expect that he'll put a few younger players in, perhaps ones that are impressed or ones that are close to the team. So I guess if he puts out a decent side, I mean, it wouldn't be alarm bells by any means, but I would be a bit disappointed if they lose.
Do you think it's a good chance to build some momentum, Rob?
I think possibly. I wouldn't go with a completely full side, but I think the players that we've already identified as being lacking in match fitness, like Bakuna and McCleary, really giving them 90 minutes would be very important, I think. And then you're looking at the youngsters who did best against Gillingham, Rinomota, Andreessen, unfortunately Sam Smith, and one or two of the others probably sort of didn't take their chance, and so maybe we'll have to wait. But I'd like to see a bit more of a kind of hybrid, because you can only really tell whether the fringe players are any good if they're playing with good players. This is the conundrum.
Yeah, and expect Millwall to make a fair few changes as well. I don't know whether Jake Cooper will make an early return to the Bernesi Stadium in their lineup. We'll have to wait and see. But after Tuesday night, well, if we're through, by the way, the draw will be at 4:15 in the morning Thursday.
I'm not doing that. News bite, don't worry.
Yeah.
Is that taking place in Thailand again?
I think it's Beijing. Don't know why, but it is.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, so there you go. Who would have thought when it was the Rumbelows Cup that 25 years later it would be being drawn in Beijing? Anyway, after cup business, it is a trip to St Andrews to take on Birmingham. What has been, it's had some good memories over the years, Johnny. I remember a 3-1 win in Steve Coppell's last season around Christmas time. The 1-0 win last season.
That was also Inflatables Day in 2012, wasn't it?
We lost.
We
won the league.
But it was Inflatables Day, so yeah. that's always a good time.
As mentioned earlier in the show, Harry Redknapp is in charge there. They've had a bit of an iffy start, but like us, they've got 4 points, 2 defeats, a draw and a win. Rob, what are you expecting from Birmingham?
Well, I think if it was not for the injuries, I would be hoping that we'd win and win quite comfortably. But I think, like Johnny, I think I'd take a draw now. I think 1-1 probably more likely. I think they made one or two decent signings, like David Stockdale in particular in goal, who was obviously promoted last year with Brighton. And, you know, they've got some players like David Davis who've been sort of solid in there for a few seasons now. But I think it's certainly a game where we've got to be looking to impose ourselves. And if, as long as we don't start as badly as we did against Preston, then I think we can take something out of the game.
Yeah, they've just signed Kyle Jenkinson as well on loan from Arsenal. He's arrived today. So a little bit of extra intrigue for that one. Johnny, the bookies have got Reading 12-5. So just over 2-1. Birmingham just better than evens at 11-10. And the draw is 12-5. Where would your money be going? This doesn't, not prediction league wise, which is obviously far more important. But do you think there's any value in there? Hashtag gamble aware.
I think possibly the draw. I don't see Birmingham being you know, that strong favourites, certainly in comparison to us, because, like you say, they've not had the best start either, and I think they've only won one game in the league so far, and that was a 2-1 win, I think, at home to Bristol City. So, I mean, I can see why they're favourites, but I wouldn't have them that favourites, but I don't trust Reading to get any... I really don't know what to make of this. I think, as ever with Reading, you don't quite know what you're going to get when they go away.
Yeah, I would very much settle for a point, but Rob, we're not a team that seems to do draws.
No, I mean, and that probably goes back 10, 15 years, to be honest. It's not just the current team. But I think that surely is the most likely option at the moment for this game, as long as we're on our mettle. Such a pity about the injuries. I mean, we've just got to see, like I said, I think we can expect Vandenberg to be back because it will be 10 days since he last played. But Kelly and Swift, probably unlikely, Abita unlikely. Obviously, we know Kermigan. I mean, Stephen Quinn, it would be nice to see if he was in the squad, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
Right. Well, John, it is time to put money where your mouth is. It is prediction league time, where you are back at the top of the table.
Where I belong.
As a former champion. Yes, you're on 3 points alongside myself, Mark and Westy. Yourself, Mark and Westy, all predicting 2-1 wins over Villa and taking maximum points. Tom Crocker is on 1 point as well, propping up the table, unfortunately, at the moment with one handbags Harris. But plenty of time for them to come back in that. What do you say about this game?
I think I'll go for a 1-1 draw. Like I said, I don't think Birmingham are a strong side by any means, but obviously we are hampered by the fact that we are pretty poor away from home. So I think if we came away from this with a 1-1 draw, a point and a goal, I'd be very satisfied.
I've predicted 1-1 in each of the four games so far this season, so I'm going to change. And I'm going to have to go on the pessimistic side. I'm going to go for a 2-0 Birmingham win, I'm afraid. Rob, care to give an honorary prediction?
I'm going to second Johnny and think for a 1-1.
Okie dokie. Lovely stuff. I will get the thoughts of Westy, Handbags and Mark in the week, and I'll be speaking hopefully to Tom Crocker on Thursday or Friday for the new podcast extra. If you've not checked it out yet, it's in association with the Wokingham Paper. We do that every Friday like we did with Charles. This time a new gooner in the hot seat, Mr. Crocker. So I very much encourage you to go listen. If you subscribe to this show, you should see that pop up on your iTunes feed as well. And as mentioned earlier in the show, you can also check them out on YouTube, Facebook, all those regular good places. Right, that's it. That just about wraps up the show. Fingers crossed we can all be getting up at 4:15 in the morning on Thursday to look ahead to our third round Carabao Cup tie.
I'll be getting up something close to that, actually, for work, but... not quite that early.
Not up for the draw, though.
No.
I'm
quite disappointed how much Carabao's name is cropping up everywhere. They should be spending all that sponsorship money on it.
Absolutely.
Surely.
Hint, yeah. Carabao, hint. You know it makes sense. Anyway, Rob, Johnny, thank you very much for joining me. Rob, just before we let you go, anything we can look forward to on the Two Unfortunates other than the outstanding work that goes up?
Well, a little bit quiet at the moment, but we've got the next thing, I think, will be a book review of Andrei Kanchelskis' autobiography, which should be quite interesting, particularly as I think he was a Ukrainian who opted to play for Russia after the breakup of the Soviet Union, which is obviously quite a controversial decision that has political resonance these days.
So. Yeah, was he one that fell out with Fergie as well? I know he moved to Everton, didn't he?
Quite possibly, along with Mr. Stam, I think. So, interesting character.
Excellent. And where can we go check out The Two Unfortunates for those unfamiliar?
www.thetwounfortunates.com.
Yeah, and at Two Unfortunates on Twitter?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Indeed. And you know where to find us, hopefully, by now. Again, thank you to everyone who joins in the Patreon campaign, who subscribes to the show and generally supports us. Head over to thetalesend.com as well. You can check out Rob's player ratings and report from Deepdale. In the meantime, we're all off. Hopefully, this show will return early next week, a date to be confirmed, so stay tuned to the Twitter for that. In the meantime, go on, you ours.
Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.